But you see, if Dale, instead of letting his voice get so thin, if he'd had a good... No commercials in this class, please. Of course. All right, you've all watched basketball on TV. What does every basketball player do? If he's been a professional for 10 years, and he's going to shoot that crucial free throw with 2 seconds left, what does he do? He says, bounce the ball. That's not all. That's not all. He takes a long, deep breath, doesn't he? And maybe he takes another one. What's he doing? He's calming his nerves. He's quietening himself. And he shoots, and it goes in. Now, if he does that in basketball, why shouldn't we learn to do it from the law? You see? And many a time I stop on the platform with a large congregation at a conference out there before me. And I sat there breathing just as deep as I could. So that when I got up, I would have control of my emotions and control of my voice. And even though you may be quivering on the inside, if you have a good supply of air down there, you are not going to manifest. It's not going to come up. Then you see you have that for extra emphasis. If you have used all the air you've got to say what you want to say, and you want to emphasize something, it comes out like this. And that just doesn't impress people. But if you've got a lot of extra air down here, you see, and you want to emphasize it, you've got plenty of it. You see? It's down here. I almost ruined what little preaching career I had in the first few years by talking from my throat. And my voice was always giving me trouble. I was forever swabbing my throat and swallowing this and that and the next thing and putting all kinds of towels on it and whatnot until somebody gave me some good common sense advice. And said, Brother Harold, stop talking from your throat and start talking from your stomach. I've never heard of talking from your stomach. But explain to me. And for quite some time, I took deep breathing exercise of lying flat on my back. Take my little baby. Lay it out there. Watch it while it breathes. What's going up and down? It's a little tummy. Little tummy's going up and down like that. It doesn't want anybody to be breathing. Now, look at us. Most of us breathe from about here up. That's about all we use. But the little child is doing what God intended to do. It's breathing all the way down. So when you and I learn to do that again, it's well worth, if we're going to be speaking from the platform, it's well worth spending time taking some exercise. Well, a good one is lying flat on your back and learning to breathe that way. Make sure your stomach is just going up and down. Another one is just take something like a rod and start with it way down there and breathe in. That's not so hard. Now, wait a minute. Try and get down to your toes again. Exhale. And you'll find it's much more difficult to control your breath going out than it is coming in. You'll get rid of it in half the time it took you to get it in. But you see, when you're speaking, it's going out. So what you've got to learn is just to have it going out. Now, I'm not talking about hot air going out. I'm talking about breath going out. Control breath. Now that is then decompose. Reconvince it. That's our second reason. Be convincing. I don't think we need to say much more on that. It's, as I said, through sincerity in our part and scripturalness. A.T. Gibbs, and you'll notice I'm referring to him quite often, because he had an apt way of expressing things in just a few words along this line. He used to say, now you can sing on several keys, but you should always preach and be natural. There's a lot to that. Just be natural. That'll convince people a whole lot more than any of the airs you put on. Just be yourself. Because, you see, if you're not, it becomes immediately apparent you're imitating something. And an imitation is never worth as much as the original is. So just be natural. Be yourself. And you'll convince people of it. The third one, be clear. You notice I'm going back over some ground that we've already covered, but we're just coming at it from a little different angle, I hope. Be clear. Be clear in your thoughts. Before you go before that class or that congregation, can you think through your message? You should be able to. If you haven't got it clearly before your mind, you'll never get it clearly before the minds of your hearers. Be clear in your thoughts. And be clear in your words. We've already talked about it. Don't use high-sounding phraseology, or it'll sound like hollow phraseology. Just use simple, everyday, down-to-earth words, not uncouth words. I don't believe that slang and that has any place on the platform where we're handling the divine things of God. We shouldn't be pompous in our language. But we should be pious. And then we should be clear in our speech. Our thoughts, our words, and our speech. Let us learn, and really work at it, to enunciate our words clearly. Let us learn to pronounce them correctly. Let us learn to speak them distinctly. Now, the most common failing of a platform speaker, and it's one I'm very guilty of, and that is to let your voice drop at the end of a sentence. Whenever I listen to a tape of a message I've given, I feel very embarrassed at the many times I allowed my voice to trail away at the end of the sentence. You know how aggravating that is. You're listening. The end of that sentence should be the most important. And the speaker drops his voice down and you wonder, just what did he say? But let's seek to speak clearly in such a way that'll be heard and be understood. It's a good thing if you can stand. Listen to a tape of your teaching or your preaching. Now, it'll humble you. It'll be good for you. At first you'll want, no, that's not me. They slipped me another one. I know that's just not me, but it is. That's what we listen to. That's exactly what we listen to when you're up there. And there it is. That's a good thing. It makes us realize our weaknesses, places that we can improve, and surely that's what we want to do when we're serving the Lord. And then, fourth, be controlled by the Spirit. Be controlled by the Spirit. We must not allow this unscriptural emphasis on the Spirit of God to cause us to swing to the other extreme and neglect the filling of the Spirit which we need. I have at times spent hours and hours over the preparation of a message. I have prayed over that message. And as I sat on the platform, waiting for a time for me to get up and speak, my prayer again and again and again has been, Lord, fill me with your Spirit. The whole thing will be useless. I believe what I'm going to say will be accurate. It'll be scripture. I'm going to say it as best I can, but Lord, you'll have to take over and make it effective. So be spirit controlled. Control by the Spirit. And then, dare I give you the last one? Remember, a preacher is a signpost. He points the right way even though he doesn't go himself. So I'm going to give you the last one. Be considerate. Be considerate. Stop on time. You know who said that? I put that in quotes. You heard about the preacher, didn't you? Young preacher. And when he got up, he's preaching away and he'd run down to this end of the platform and put his arms up like this. And then he'd run down to the other end of the platform and put his arms up like this. And they said to him, those were strange gestures. What are you doing then? Oh, he said, that was quotation marks. Well, I was quoting someone when I said be brief. You see? I'd stop one time, but after all, while I can't say much about that, yet I should. After all, I don't think I've ever preached an hour over time. In fact, I'm here. There's proof of that. But still, it is. I know that. And the Lord impressed it on me, you know, after I got through my surgery and was able to come back to the services. Well, the old boys had a new tabernacle. I was so thin, you know, I'd gone down to 145 pounds. And I was so thin that to sit on those old benches over there was torture. And I was too proud to bring a cushion. At first, although my torment got better than my pride, and I brought along a cushion eventually. But I thought, now the Lord's just punishing me for the way I punished his people. And I heard some of the longest sermons I ever heard in all my life during that time. At least they seemed long to me. So we need to remember that. Blessed are they who stop on time, for they shall be invited back again. Well, that's a few BCs now. I don't like to be negative, but I think in connection with this, it wouldn't hurt for us just to have a few don'ts. Sometimes if you approach a thing from a negative standpoint, you can say a lot in just a few words, and that's what I'd like to. First of all, let me give just a few don'ts that I've jotted down from my experience. First of all, don't preach on a subject or a text that you're not sure of. Be sure that you understand that text or that message before you attempt to teach it or preach it. Second, don't ride a hobby horse. I have gone to some place, and you're just about sure, if you went there, what you're going to hear. You're going to hear a message on prophecy. Every time you'd hear a message on prophecy, or every time you'd hear a message on church duty, or something like that. Now, these are all important things. But God doesn't want us riding a hobby horse. Oh, the book is too full for that. So, vary your subjects so that there'll be the element of surprise, as well as other elements that are very valuable. Another mistake, don't scold your audience. You know, they didn't have to come and listen to you. And likely, they're saying inwardly, well, I made one mistake. I came, but I'll not make the same one again. Don't scold your audience. You can speak plain I believe in that. If we're speaking in the name of the Lord, we can speak words of rebuke, but that's entirely different than a scolding that I have heard coming from the platform. It's just entirely out of place. Don't use a lot of cliches. Now, you know what a cliche is. A cliche is a word or an expression, likely an expression, that in itself is quite all right. That has been used so often, it's become entirely worn out and lost all its effectiveness. Have you heard some messages? And about every second word of dear friends. Now, a preacher doesn't have to impress on the fact, on his audience, the fact they are his dear friends. The fact that they're sitting there listening proves that, I think. If they're all to get up and leave, he might wonder whether they were his dear friends. But the fact that they're sticking it out to the bitter end should prove that they are his dear friends. It's all right to address them as your dear friends. But not every second or two. And there are quite a number. In other words. Well, why say something and then say now in other words? And then say the same thing over again. Personally, I think that is an insult to the intelligence of your audience. Or to you. The first statement should have been clear enough. They just haven't said in other words. Well, you could go on. There's all kinds. I'm sure I have cliches that I use again and again that I shouldn't. But we should try to weed these out of our messages and go ahead and, because so much of this can lose the attention of your audience. And then, as I mentioned in connection with preparing an outline last night, don't overemphasize your outline. As I said, a skeleton's a good thing, but it isn't a nice thing to look at. And a skeleton of a sermon, if you see it in every sentence or two, it gets awfully bony, you know. Put a little flesh on it. Don't overemphasize your outline. Don't spend too much time repeating your previous message. Now, if you're giving a series of studies, if you're going through a book, as it were, or on a subject, it certainly is quite in order to link what you are now speaking on with the previous one. But don't spend too much time on that. As I said, that's a rebuke that my spiritual father gave me right at the beginning of my preaching career. He said, you told us just what you told us the night before. We'd heard it once. He should have gone on ahead and given us something new tonight. So it's so possible to spend a lot of time reviewing and rehearsing, and it really becomes rehashing. Don't take a notebook this size to the platform, brother. That's all right in the classroom. I think it's quite in place in the classroom. We found in our early days at Emmaus that because the students were accustomed to seeing the teacher come to the classroom every day with his large notebook like this, because there had a lot of material to refer to, and because they were expected to bring their notebook, and get down what they could, that when they were asked by the local assembly to take the Sunday night gospel meeting, they appeared with a notebook like this, you know? Well, it didn't do anything for them. When they marched up to the platform and opened up a notebook like this, you know, it just kind of went over like a lead balloon. We should all be notable preachers. I don't think we should tax our memory to try and remember everything if you can make a few notes. But I believe they should be kept out of sight as much as possible. If you feel in preparing a message, particularly if you are just more or less a beginner, if you feel you want to even write it out, or write out quite an extensive outline, and so on, go ahead and do it. But then take that and reduce it. And maybe take that and reduce it to a number of cards. Because I believe the more conspicuous your notes are, the more danger there is of you losing the attention of your people. They like the feast. Now they know that you study. They know that you prepare. They undoubtedly know that you have some notes. But they want to feel that it's coming from you, not from your notes. And I believe that if we keep our notes in that sense, as much out of sight as possible, it's better. I was telling some of the brethren last night when we gathered here early about our brother George Landers, who of course was a seminary trained minister before he came into the assemblies, and had the best of training and was a very fine platform speaker. I was with him on many occasions at Bible conferences. I was with him at this occasion in the city of New York at a large Bible conference there. And he gave a very outstanding message that morning on the person of Christ. You've all heard how Christ is likened to, we'll say, to the flowers of the lily of the valley, and so on. Well, he had a long list of those. I was entertained for dinner at the home of a sister in the assembly, and she's remarking about what a splendid message it was. And I agreed with her heartily, for I sat on the platform behind Brother Landis and enjoyed it tremendously. It was just one of those unfoldings of Christ that just thrilled your heart. And she said to me, "You know, Brother McKay, what amazed me was he gave the whole message without using any notes. How could he remember all of those things?" I said, "Now, sister, you remember that Brother Landis had a very graceful gesture like this?" "Yes," she said, "I thought that was very effective." I said, "It was." And every time he went like that, he picked up his next point from his notes. Well, I was sitting right behind him. Now, you see, that was real skillful using of the preparation he'd made without giving the impression to the people. Because, you see, if you read too much, it gets the taste of paper in your mouth, and people can recognize it. But Brother George, he would be going along fine, all his graceful gestures, you know, and then I'd say to myself, "Here comes another form." Sure enough, he'd pick it right up on the fly and give it out, you know. It was good. I learned a whole lot. And one of the great privileges of my life has been to share the platform with some of these real platform giants. You'd have thought I'd learned a little more. Giant, but... So don't make it too apparent that you're using notes the way I am, turning the page. Now, a classroom is one thing. I'm gathered with your class, so I said, we are just taking up basic truths these two nights because we're covering a vast amount of information and stuff. And you have to adapt this to your circumstance. Some of it you don't need. Some of it you'll have to adapt to whatever the circumstance may be where you are speaking. And so, there will be time, I feel, I hope that it doesn't seem out of place that I'm using this large notebook tonight. It's simply my class lecture, although these have been prepared afresh for these studies. No matter how complete my studies may be, I don't like to get up and just use the same thing again and again. It can form the basis for it. But I like to make fresh preparation for every time I stand up to speak, because every congregation will be different. And we ought to know a little bit more than when we spoke on the same subject a month ago, we said. So just adapt it to yourself. But then, in connection with this, don't look down too much. Now, I believe a lot of good speakers are not actually looking at their nose, but they keep their eyes down so much that they almost give the impression they're reading it. Now, there's nothing inspiring about the top of the head on a speaker. It's so much better if he's looking at you. That's what you want people to do. Hey, you want the speaker to look at you and you look at him. And if he can stand it, you can stand it. And so you just keep looking at each other. It's perfectly scriptural. John said he wanted to speak face to face. Well, I know what that means, but you can use that. It just I'm keeping our head down and tongue away. I'm not looking at my notes now, but you think I was, you see. And think I was just reading it off. And so you take the opportunity. Well, he's not looking at me. I can get a few winks of sleep now before he looks up again. They don't look down too much. And don't develop unusual gestures. Come unto me, all you that labor and are heavy laden, I will give you rest. Doesn't that have a real appeal to it? Don't you just feel like getting up and going? Especially if it were Stan Ford that was up there saying, come unto me. You know, you'd be heading for the door. We can take the effectiveness off a lot of good things we say by not using right gestures. Now, I know I use my hands entirely too much when I'm preaching. Don't follow my example. It's a psychological thing because I have difficulty in pronouncing my words and enunciating. The psychologists say that you try to make up for that by using your hands. See? It's a psychological thing. I asked one psychologist why it was when I was recovering that I wanted to write. For a year or so when I couldn't preach, I wanted to be writing, and I found myself writing things. Middle of the night when I'd be awake, I'd reach out and get a pad and be writing. I said to this Christian psychologist, oh, why is that? Well, he said, you see, how you haven't yet been able to speak right. And your being, your ego, you are responding to that urge to utter something. You can't do with your mouth where you also, so you're writing. So I know that because I'm constantly handicapped by the paralysis in my left side, I feel that I'm not speaking forcefully. And so I'm using this hand too much. I know that. But don't follow my example. Follow what I'm saying. Don't develop unusual gestures. And as George Landis in his lectures on humble you always say, don't keep always doing the same thing. Have you listened to some speakers? Beloved brethren, will you please turn to Psalm 23? Now we will read from the first verse. The Lord is my shepherd. You know what that does? Why, you just lose interest right then. You get so occupied with his glasses that you forget what he's saying. And you start thinking, well, suppose he dropped them. And they broke. Could he read? And who would be able to fill in for him? You see? All of that goes through the minds of people that are supposed to be listening, but they're not. You've lost their attention. Well, now that's enough, don't. Like that's just bad enough of everything.